Yes, grab a cup, grab a seat, and welcome on in to Coffee and Cornbread. It's Trivia Tuesday. I hope you're ready for it on Trivia Tuesday. Exciting Tuesday for us with Auburn speaking at SEC Media Days. We'll get to that, but first, it's time for one question, one guess, 1 minute. We'll give you the question. You can think about it for the entire episode. We'll give you the answer later on in today's show. On this day in 1972, what legendary comedian was arrested in Milwaukee after performing his controversial seven words you can never say on television routine? You're a little older. If you're listening, you might know this one from the, or off the bat. If not, maybe you don't know. Take some guesses. Don't Google it. And let me know how you do in the comment description below. We'll reveal the answer at the end of today's show. Now let's catch you up on everything you missed around the barn. One of the biggest questions surrounding Auburn's offense this season isn't about talent. No, it's about adjustments. Alex Golish says this is the first time he and his entire offense is installed before fall camp. But what happens when defenses inevitably take away plan A? That happens a lot inside the SEC. On this week's Top Button podcast, Kyle explained why Auburn's ability to adapt could define the entire 2026 season.
If I could ask Alex Golish a question, I think the first thing I would ask is, you know, you've mentioned, or he mentioned, that this is the first time ever that he's had his full offense installed even before fall camp. So what we've seen in the past, and I think what's hindered Auburn the most, is the inability to pivot. Auburn's had an inability to diagnose what the biggest issue is, and I'm primarily talking about offense, and then pivot to something that works, being flexible, being malleable. It's like we talk about it. Once things start going wrong, it's like we just continue to do the same things over and over again, kind of banging your head against the wall. Last year, and schedules don't help, because remember last year, you come out against Baylor and you run all over them. And I can remember, though, and I think I even asked this to Tyler Siski. I had him on the show, and I asked him how sustainable, when you get into SEC play, is that version of the offense, you know, where it's not a ton of vertical passing and it's a lot of quarterback runs. And, you know, it was fun. It was a fun game. You blew them out, but there was some question marks. And you go into Ball State, you learn nothing. South Alabama, there were some, maybe some chinks in the armor starting to show, had several sacks. And then you just sort of, you know, limped to a convincing win. I mean, it's 31-15, but it didn't cover the spread. And then you go to Oklahoma and it's like, oh my gosh, everything is kind of turned on its head. We actually see some really big issues along the offensive line, at quarterback. And then those same issues were the same issues every single game, it felt like.
Well, it's not really about if Golish is a good play caller or not. It's about what separates good offenses from championship caliber offenses. Every team enters the season believing its system will work, but SEC defenses force you to adjust. We see it all the time. We talk about how great Durkin's defense is. Well, there's 15 others that are around the same caliber inside this conference. Matchups change. What works in week one might not work in week six, especially if you're going from Baylor to LSU, if you're going from Sanford to Alabama. It just might not work. So for Auburn, that's been one of the biggest frustrations over the last several years. Too often, the offenses look stuck in trying to find answers. If Golish's system is as complete as everyone believes it can be, and I truly believe it can be, I've seen it happen in South Florida. I think it translates well into this new conference, and I think this season will be the first opportunity to prove Auburn can make those adjustments on the fly. And on the fly is going to be the key word, because, man, that offense is going to be fast. I actually have enough time. Maybe figure out, you know, your best mailing plans, who has the best delivery. Maybe think about asking the spouse if you can install a fridge or a cooler inside your couch. Because, man, this offense is going to be one that you're not going to want to stand up and move until halftime. Greg Sankey's comments on SEC officiating created plenty of headlines at SEC Media Days. Really, what he didn't say about it. But one particular comparison didn't sit well with Dap, and he sat in for Zach on today's Village Vice, and it explained why he believes comparing officials to student athletes completely missed the point on what fans have been asking for.
Yeah. His answer was to this question, to me, Brad, was the most disappointing and just kind of triggered me a little bit. I don't like anybody that's in that position of power to make the analogy of an official and a student athlete. And his comparison was, yep, I guess if people make mistakes, we should start pulling scholarships. Are you kidding me with that? That's, you're talking about a profession. I get NIL money and all that. I do. It's not like it used to be.
Yeah.
But these are still not career. Some of these guys, when they take the pads off, are done for their life. These officials are career, get paid professionals. And by the way, these 18-year-old kids have to stand in front of us after games and take questions. Those officials don't. Please don't insult me and make that analogy. That is asinine, and that bothered me a lot. And that's why I wish I could have followed up.
We're not talking about asking for perfection. Nobody's ever claimed officials should be perfect. We're talking about egregious. And let me tell you something. If a player gets out there and has egregious error after egregious error, he won't stay on the field.
Okay, no one's asking officials to be perfect. No one's expecting that. The issue is accountability. That's the issue. Players and coaches answer questions after games. They get criticized publicly when they make mistakes. I mean, we talk about them all the time, all year round. Multiple shows come out on the barn every single day. We don't get that the other way around. Fans just simply just want to know. The same level of transparency doesn't exist for officiating, especially when controversial calls can change the outcome of games. And for Auburn fans, that's nothing new. Georgia game, the Oklahoma game are some ones that are just not going to go away anytime soon, even if this program starts winning, because this officiating conversation isn't going away. So whether you agree with Dap or not, Greg Sankey's response ensured this debate isn't going away anytime soon and probably not going to get the answers that you're hoping for. One of the biggest talking points from Greg Sankey's opening days wasn't what he said, it's what he wouldn't say. And man, this frustrates me. And they continue talking about it on our members only podcast, Afternoon Delight. Charlie Five and Ben Taylor explain why he believes the SEC should follow the ACC's lead when it comes to these officialing transparency issues, because the ACC is actually, dare I say, in this topic, the gold standard. Check it out.
A lot of people have looked at and pointed to the ACC and how they do replays, because if I'm not mistaken, they show audio of the actual back and forth, which I think a lot of people like. And the SEC has not done that. And as a matter of fact, Sankey almost doubled down on, he was actually transparent about the fact that they're not going to be transparent. So he basically is like, there are things that happen that we're just not going to share publicly. Like there's things that are conversations that are going to go on. He mentioned when he followed up on Mike G's question, he's like, because Mike said, how do the coaches feel about officiating? Kind of like, you know, are your coaches as, you know, high on officiating?
In other words, what did they say down at Destin to you during SEC meetings that you're not telling us?
And he said, you know, every coach has the ability to submit plays, submit calls, and there's a review process. It doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to go back and change anything, which that's never, ever going to be a thing. He's like, but we're probably never going to publicize those. Those aren't going to be things that we put out there.
Why?
Well, I guess my question to you, Ben, would be, I don't think that the coaches want their – I don't think the coaches want to be – want all that stuff out there either.
No. I'm totally okay with him holding some stuff back. Him doubling down on what the ACC is doing – I think that the ACC put every other conference on blast doing that this past year, because nothing shady went on. Everything was transparent as far as the review process. If they're supposed to maintain professionalism, and those officials are supposed to be professional, as well as the replay booth in Birmingham is supposed to be professional, because Sankey's got an image issue when it comes to replay, because I'm not doing this because I'm an Auburn fan. It is other schools saying this too. They don't like the fact that the replay booth is in Birmingham and Alabama is located so close to Birmingham, along with a bunch of Alabama donors.
Look, the ACC showed this past season that letting fans hear the replay discussion created more understanding. Even the call didn't go the team's way. At least it eliminated controversy. And that is the biggest thing you're trying to take away from here. They don't have to be perfect on the field if they can show the entire process happening behind the scenes. If you see the process go out in front of you, whether you agree with it or not, at least you know that everybody has seen the same things you have seen. It's not a, hey, let's throw the dollar under the table and let's make sure that this play goes a certain way. Not saying that happens anymore, but the idea is what is the big deal about that. You got to eliminate controversy, and that's what the ACC is doing. With Auburn on the wrong end of several high-profile calls last year, I mean, the scoop and score for a touchdown, are you kidding me? That got called back? It's easy to understand why this has become such a hot-button issue for SEC fans, especially us, especially Auburn fans. When the conference eventually changes its approach, and that remains to be seen, but after Sankey's comments, this conversation is just dead in the water? Is it going away anytime soon? I don't know. I hope that we constantly hear media go after him continuously until we get some sign of transparency. And maybe it's not as transparent, but maybe it's just not as shady. Well, Pro Football Focus, PFF, made plenty of headlines by ranking Auburn's Byron Browns as the top returning quarterback inside the SEC, and at least in the top returning for a college football player. But not everyone is buying it. On the Barnes Social Hour last night, Hunter and Graham explained why the numbers back it up and why Brown has already proven he can produce against SEC caliber competition, even though he has yet to suit up for the Tigers.
I'm not going to lie. I'm actually kind of blown away by those throwing numbers or passing numbers. I was not expecting that. In fact, those are in like his top five of like the most on the year. Later in the year against like Navy and UAB and Rice, he threw ridiculous numbers. Like he almost threw 400 against UAB.
Gah. Take that, yeah. Trent Dilfer.
But yeah, I mean, I'm impressed the amount of yards he was able to throw against Miami and Florida, especially for being a quarterback that is, you know, really considered a big running threat. And so, yeah, I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah, I just, again, you look at those numbers and you think, well, he won't do that in the SEC. Guys, he's playing Florida and Miami, who ended up, I know that they probably lost, you know, obviously they lost against Miami, you know, no crap, you know, but they beat Florida in the Swamp, and Miami literally came up short of being a national champion against Indiana. So in a way, if you look at it, they finished second in the country, if you will. So, and then granted, you know, the Rices, the UABs, the Navies, you know, it's just a no-brainer. I'm blown away by those stats too. I knew about the Florida game. I didn't know about the Miami game. So that's really cool to see, those stats. But I'm excited. I'm ready. The fact that he's put in, you know, everyone's saying that, you know, he looks better and healthier than he did at USF. And I think he's, you know, gained a little bit more muscle weight too, so that's a positive for the rushing attack, because like he said at that dinner, he is a violent runner and he will let you know about it. So I am curious to see, you know, how we capitalize on that.
Just because he hasn't played in an official game with the SEC doesn't mean he can't play against SEC opponents. He put up huge numbers at USF. It's who he did it against as well. He threw for more than 260 yards against Florida and Miami. He rushed for over 1,000 yards on the season, passed for over 3,000 yards. That's why so many people inside Auburn believe his game will translate to the SEC. And I truly do as well. I think if anything, you have to put more of the concern on the offensive line. Are they ready for SEC competition? I have faith in them, but I think that is more of the concern to me rather than if Byram can translate his game. I like the running backs in the room. I think the running backs might be the deepest in the country, let alone the SEC. And I like the fact that there's a ton of wide receivers that he already has experience with on the roster. If you're going to put any type of head-scratching, maybe concerns on this offense, I don't think it's can Byrum do what he does in the past because of Byrum Brown. I think it's because of his supporting cast, and I'm really pointing at that offensive line. But still, I feel pretty good about that. Now, the conversation shifts from projections to proof. You know, can Brown carry that production into one of the toughest conferences in college football? If he does, Auburn, you know, it's the biggest surprise in the league. We're already hearing at SEC Media Days. Zach spoke about it a couple times on his shorts or on his videos across Monday's episodes, that many media members are coming up to him and saying they truly believe Auburn is the dark horse of the conference. Do you think that's true? I actually do. Because when you look at that schedule and you're like, man, if everything gets done that they need to get done, they're a 7-5 football team. And that's like the expectation of the floor. But then you start looking at some of the other games, like the Tennessees, the LSUs, maybe even the Ole Misses. And all of a sudden, that expectation of 7 wins starts turning into a dark horse conversation. So fire me up. I'm super excited. I can't wait to hear what Alex Golish and the players say at SEC Media Days today. Make sure you check that out. We'll have it across the channels, no doubt, for sure. Before we let you go, though, today's answers to Tuesday's trivia on July 21st, 1972, George Carlin was arrested at Milwaukee Summerfest after performing his famous 7 words you can never say on television. The charges were eventually dismissed, but the incident became one of the most defining moments in debate over free speech and broadcast censorship in America. How about that, right? So I thought that was a really fun one to have discussed today on Tuesday Trivia. If you got any fun comments or you have an idea for trivia for next week, you can drop it in the comments. I'd love to put it on the show. We'll have a Would You Rather Wednesday coming up tomorrow. And of course, we have Alex Golish and the players talking at SEC Media Days today. That'll do it for today's episode. Plenty to be excited about with Auburn today and across the barn. Make sure you keep us locked in right here. Thanks for pulling up a chair. We'll do it again tomorrow right here on Coffee and Cornbread. War Eagle.